Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Kirk Gray.
So, Kirk, we were chatting about this, that, and the other thing as we're getting started here. And you said, and I know you don't really like, you know, the more analytical side of reliability engineering, which, you know, we've talked about it a number of times. But no. Then you mentioned you're on a standards committee for derating. I'm like, what in the world are you doing on there?
Well, it was just like I was on the standards committee for reliability prediction. I was there more of a devil's advocate than anything else to try and hold them and question and set up challenges to what statements they were making. It's just like reliability prediction. I have definitely have a perspective and a frame of reference and experience in the field of a field service engineer and working with Dell, working with failure analysis and x-rays and looking at the causes of failures. And my general assessment of reliability, the causes of reliability, are that the majority of reliability failures are not due to intrinsic wear out mechanisms, either in semiconductors or resistors or any of the components, solder and anything like that. They're mostly due to error.
But you wrote a beautiful article related to that. There's another argument you made is the infant mortality, the early life failures, as I like to call them, are due to errors. So you got the wrong components, you got counterfeit components, you damaged it on installation, you'd installed it incorrectly, you did
delamination.
There's stuff that goes wrong and it shows up pretty quick. But you also talk about that, you know, we don't end up, and it goes back to the, and I'm drawing a complete blank, I can never remember their names. It was a kind of the birth of reliability-centered maintenance. And it was a study of United maintenance practices, and I think it was in the 70s. And they showed that vast majority of components on an aircraft don't wear out. What they didn't mention in there is that the common practice at the time was to strip the aircraft to its foundation, basically, every 5 years and replace everything with brand new stuff. So they...
That's true.
You know, even if it would last.
Except for the frame. The airframe doesn't wear out.
No,
they look for cracks.
They look for cracks.
And fatigue damage over time.
Right.
But they don't replace the frame.
No, but if you have a navigation system, and I think the gist of your article was related to this, why people don't think things wear out, is that we have this technological obsolescence. The article you wrote on the hole in the bathtub curve. Right. So there's a combination of things.
Drain in the bathtub curve.
Yeah.
That's where most of your products are, like I have sitting around, you know, many. Well, I still have some DVD players. I still have a old VHS tape system that would work. Works fine if I find some old technology and put it in there.
I get many the old wooden pencils laying around.
My basic statement has been that technological obsolescence for most electronics, for the vast majority of electronics, technological obsolescence comes before the intrinsic wear out mechanisms of like solder fatigue or hot carrier injection in semiconductors
exactly.
You know, I mean, I can name you know, all those things.
Well, I know, but what I'm looking at is like when I was at HP with the printer, and I won't go into the details of the story, but I'm agreeing with you, is that, you know, they were making, for one of the product lines, one type of printer, it was a home printer, they were making 1 million a month. And then later in my career, I was working with a company that was making CPAP machines. It's a breathing aid device for people that
positive pressure.
Yeah.
Right.
And they were making hundreds of thousands of these. I'm like, what? There's that many people that need this as well.
Oh yeah.
Every year we come out with a new product that's quieter or faster or, you know, less expensive or does this, that, or thing. And It was the same as with the printers and iPhone. You know, as we're recording this now, iPhone is getting advertised all over the number 12, but
and I'm still using the 6.
Yeah.
It works fine for me.
That's right. And so
except for the battery, which will wear out, and I've replaced the battery once.
But 6, that must, your phone must be what, 6 or 7 years old? 7, 8 years old?
I think they were selling them for a while longer.
Okay.
They sell parallel models. So still selling the 11 and the 12, and my daughter just got an 11.
Oh, okay.
Fortunately, she paid for it herself, so she'll be more careful with it.
Yeah, for 2 weeks.
Yeah. I'll show you her old phone.
But I think there's a couple parts to our ongoing, and we're like 600 episodes into this show, right? And we've talked about this a number of times. But the idea of derating is not only for the long-term wear out. That's not what's there. And it goes back to what we talk about in HALT, is that, you know, we're going to test a handful of samples and go find where their operational or destruct limits are. And one of the decisions that comes into our HALT programs, right, if we take an iPhone and we run it up and down in temperature, the first indication of operational failure is at minus 100 degrees Celsius and at plus 200 degrees Celsius, are we going to recommend any fixes for this based on that evidence?
No.
But if we had failures at 35 C, right? Or not, yeah, you know, if we were just barely above what we think the operating limits are, then we would consider it. If we failed, you know, well, within our expected environment, we would have to do something. But even if it's just close. Now, Mike Silverman talks about, and I remember him talking about it, and he was trying to add statistics to the whole discussion. He said, if we have a small margin, and the logic I think is sound, if we have a small margin between where it goes operational destruct limit versus where we expect the product to be used, we know that there's variability in the environment. It could be hotter or cooler than what we think it is. And our product will have variability once we start making them. They all won't be exactly like the one that we tested. Some will be better, some will be worse. And so if we expect it to work at 40 C and it fails at 45 C, well, we can expect that there's going to be problems similar to what we experienced, even at lower temperatures. Right.
I'm in total agreement.
So that's in the way I understand derating, getting back to my, and this is why I thought you were on derating, is that we set derating guidelines so that the device that we select and put into the product is robust to those uncertainties of use and application variabilities and the component variabilities, because no two resistors are exactly alike. So if we get a failure in HALT and we identify it to a resistor or component or, you know, the conductivity of the trace changes and causes a problem, those kind of things, we know that there's going to be variability. So the derating is an attempt to make the design robust to those variabilities. And so a fallout of that is
Fred,
back to your, let me finish. That robustness allows us to tolerate more errors. That's Fred, where it comes into play.
I'm agreeing to some extent of what you're saying about putting in margin.
Yeah.
Okay. But I'm also I'm disagreeing that you haven't finished the analysis if you don't isolate which component that is causing the problem, because many of the components in there are having no problem and don't have any necessarily a parametric shift. Now, if you have a destruct level, that's, you know, if you have a component that is destroyed at 45, when the product is supposed to operate at 35 normally, then you're really in serious trouble. And you obviously identified the big red arrow points to that component.
Well, yeah, maybe. Well, you got to be careful with that component. It could be that, you know, the current regulator falls apart and lets more current through and kills that component. And you got to do the failure analysis all the ways.
You're right. And you can, the idea is you try to isolate as much as possible to the limiting component in the system. and not go ahead and pay more sometimes, not all components. The higher rating doesn't always cost more, but it can lead to other parametric issues if you get a higher rated component, sometimes using it at half power or less or something like that. There are cases where that using a higher required component, it doesn't perform as well at its lower end of its use.
Oh, yeah. Spectrum. I totally agree.
Okay. So you haven't done the complete job. I looked and I wrote about HALT as a way of finding the weak link and finding the need for uprating or improve adding higher power, higher capability. And one of my first successes was at Advanced Energy. I think I've talked about that, mm-hmm. but it was one component. Now, we did try to isolate exactly what you said. Was it a driving current in the collector, emitter, or, you know, mm-hmm. was there some other cause of this component blowing up, which was a big, large bipolar switch, mm-hmm. 500 volt, you know, some huge amps, 3x5.
When you don't want to be anywhere near when it blows up.
Yeah, and you could hear it outside the chamber when it blew up. Okay. So we did try and look at the inputs to that device and look for shifts in what was driving that to that point. But instead, we never really got to the real true cause of that component being overstressed. And it was only at 45C, I think, which the product was supposed to operate to 35, something like that. So yeah. It was very close to the end margin. But that was only one of the three samples. One of them actually still operated up to 90 degrees mm-hmm. C, and it was the same component.
Yeah, and so it goes back to that idea that they vary. Yeah.
Right. But eventually we just said, okay, let's uprate that component. Let's put that one in instead of 100-amp switch, let's try and use 150 amp switch to use in a different product.
So it's but more let's robust just see what to happens. That variability.
We dropped that in there. Okay. So we did. And we got, you know, 30 degrees more margin out of the general shift in the whole, in this very small population, you know, 3-4 samples that we had.
Right.
So that was the efficient and economical approach to, yes, increasing the margin on that component. And we did it, and it did huge. They'd reduced their failure rate, you know, by 90%. Yeah. Okay.
It's a great story. Well, how many components are in one of these products?
Thousands.
Okay.
I mean, it had this big circuit board in there. It was very complex. These are high energy power supplies that had very precision mm-hmm. that could stop an arc before it began. And, right. you know, they had incredible things that you wouldn't think a power supply could do, but they were running 5,000 or 500 volts. No, I'm not sure what the voltage is, but it was for different semiconductor applications. Anyway, okay. this is 20 years ago.
Yeah.
This is, even longer than
the
25
point is,
years.
Is that when where I ran into using derating is,
yeah,
you know, I'm it was with printers and with personal computers and calculators and servers and everything else. And the time to market, especially for the consumer based products, the time to market pressure was immense. I mean, I had one director tell me, I was asking her about priorities for their team and what do you got to focus on? What's the most important thing? And she said, time to market. What were the other ones? we don't talk about the other ones. But right. they would put cost into it because one of the things that she didn't have time for, she didn't have time for you to do a HALT test and do failure analysis.
Right. So you shotgun it.
We derated everything and you buy
so
good
you
components.
May have paid a little more. We may have paid a lot more. We don't know.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't really compare.
But what
the
we found,
bombs.
Well, I did. I was comparing when one of the things we did and what Dick Moss had done is mm-hmm. I had the advantage of working at HP at the time. And we had, as Dick Moss would call it, and I had more divisions than he did, but he said, we have 35 loosely affiliated feudal Baronies. And they were just different product lines, you know, right. different divisions of the company. And they all could do their own thing. And so,
yes, that's what I, when I dealt with HP, many different locations, I realized that they were kind of independent. And that may have been from a good point that each one had the ability to develop their own unique revelation instead of following everybody else.
Oh, and it had all kinds of advantages.
But it was also, there was no standard in HP.
Oh, yeah, I wrote it. And Dick Moss had written the one prior to it for derating. And we, okay. I mean, we did. We worked with, both of us used the same technique, and I learned it from him, is we worked with the subject matter experts, you know, the lead designers in the different divisions. And as a corporate entity, we did a committee thing. And it took us about a year and a half, and it touched on a lot of the things that you're specifically talking about. Is earlier you were talking about, well, if you derate it too much, you lose functionality out of the component. So some things we derated 80%, some things made more sense at 50%, and others, whenever. And why I was involved was
based on what? And derated from what?
The rated value of the supplier.
Why did you trust what the supplier guaranteed the performance of that device under those conditions? Why wouldn't
We did some testing in house. We know from experience, and what I have to support it is that we had the opportunity to go talk to and see the failure rates of every division, and we had 1 year warranties, right? So I only really had warranty data. So that's all early life failure stuff, right?
Right. Right.
There's very few cases where it was obviously a wear out, and that was usually because of really bad design.
A year. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
And
a year's use. Yeah. I doubt where
it shouldn't be wearing out. Shouldn't be, but there were a few exceptions where they really had a bad design and it went bad. It wore out quickly.
Well,
they
can overstress a component and it.
Well, no. It was just silly designs. But anyway,
okay.
In general, most of these people did really good job. They made really successful products. HP had this reputation that we made solid stuff.
Yeah. They made great products.
But what we had the advantage of is looking at the warranty of the individual product lines. And the surveys that both Dick Moss did and I did asked about what's your derating practice? How rigorous do you use it? Do you use it proactively or not and stuff? And so it was the number one relationship was if you actively practice derating according to a guideline, and we had one internally that many people used, and many of them modified it locally because of their own design practices. If they used it and made sure it was built into the design, their warranty was at 0.5%. If they didn't use it and said, no, we just, designers are smart, they do their own thing. And I go talk to the designers and they're doing, I pick apart and it says it's rated for 12 volts, so I use it at 12 volts. They had 8 to 20% warranty their warranty bills were 8 to 20% of their revenue. It was night and day. If you don't derate, you pay it in warranty. And so I had solid evidence that derating works.
But you were looking at a very statistical general thing. Did you connect the causes, the failure, the modes, failure mechanisms, failure modes to a component, or the components not? I mean,
vast majority. When I was at HP, it was rare that we got parts back, and it was rare unless it was an escalation for a major problem. It was very rare that we did field failure analysis because it was cheaper to send them a new part, a new component, so new board. We did very little repair.
Yeah. Well, two things, Fred. One is, there was no failure analysis to connect those two things, that some component was too hot or you had intermittent failures or something was wrong. It probably didn't come back completely. I don't know, whether it was a catastrophic failure or was it an intermittent problem of operation, which can be, both be caused by a marginal component.
Right.
But the big question, and this is something Michael Pecht and I've talked about with 217 and derating, because he came up with the term uprating.
Yeah.
And he said in the Boeing 777, you know, he said 80% of those parts are uprated. In fact, they're being used outside the manufacturer's spec. Mm-hmm. And there's two particular things for, at least in semiconductors, I believe, there's two different levels of use specification. One is the recommended range of use, where the product, the component, say semiconductor, will operate within the guaranteed specs of the performance specs of the mm-hmm. manufacturer. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then there's an absolute maximum rating where the component can be, you know, the manufacturer will not guarantee the parametric performance, but he is not saying is in danger of being being destructive, and that's his absolute maximum rating is mm-hmm. where the maximum potential would be destructed.
Right.
And I'm sitting in a big company, the big computer company, and Michael Pexler asking the people who do the derating analysis, what level of specification are you using? Are you using the absolute maximum rating? Are you using the recommended rating? And they shrug their shoulders and say, we don't know. And with that kind of it could be, and again, I'm saying that generally, why would you be using a component from a manufacturer that you don't trust what his rating is going to be uniform? Or in general, all manufacturers' components have margin. Okay, they have to make and produce with the variation in manufacturing to make sure they meet that all their components are meeting specification. They have the component generally has more capability than the manufacturer rates it to.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that we've
and that's why PECT and others can do uprating. Yeah. We know that there's margin and for certain parametrics, so it's fine. Yeah.
Right. You have to monitor and test because once you start uprating, you're going outside the manufacturer's guaranteed parametric performance. And so, you know, it requires monitoring, and that's apparently what it does. But, you know, you can do the shotgun like you did with your printer, and that may have addressed a component or a low margin part of the design that was overstressing one component because it had too much current, had transients going through it, mm-hmm. whatever. We don't know. If you didn't do the failure analysis, you don't connect to that.
Well, we also didn't have as many problems. If you did the derating, you just didn't have failures. So it doesn't take too many field failures or even prototype failures to really be expensive. And we've showed it over and over again. You pay twice the price for a component all the way through your design. It pays for itself 20x easily. So it is as much of an economic decision plus the time to market. You know, we didn't want to be troubleshooting problems as we're getting ready to launch. That was the last thing these programs wanted to do. So they spent the money to design it, over-design it, some would argue.
Right, right,
right.
And I say that they could have gotten the same results or better results if by they had time it in a halt test.
If they had time. If they had time. They don't have time. They don't have time. By the time we get prototypes, we're already preparing manufacturing to ramp. I mean, the last minute stuff was just to make sure it didn't kill anybody, is to make sure it functioned as we expect. We did a bunch of testing, but it was really late in the program, and it was catastrophic if you found anything serious. You didn't want to do that. You didn't want to find anything bad.
Well, no, that's why all testing is precarious for the tester.
Right.
Going back to the team and saying, well, this failed this.
Yeah.
No, and they certainly don't hear through halt that, well, we found a weakness or whatever that is well outside spec.
Yeah. Well, in some cases, there are cases where, you know, we would say, oh, this is a new fangled concept or design. Let's get the protos for those early as possible so that we can sort them out. But for the vast majority of it, especially electronics, we just derated them. And then it just avoided the whole issue whatsoever. We didn't have to go to the lab. We didn't have to worry about field failures. The field failure rates were low. So to the point where we didn't care, it was fine. You know, so it was.
I don't know. Did you carry that analysis to future products? And
well, I did it with 50 different divisions and thousands of products. So it's not anything I can publish because of the NDAs and everything else I did there. But the evidence that both Dick Moss wrote about it in his book, right? In there. And I replicated it with a much broader realm.
You have not, to me, connected the physics of what's going on that caused the failure in the field.
Who cares? And you got the results. You derated it. You got the results.
Well, yeah, you got results on a very large statistical base.
Yeah.
And we don't know what the causes of failures.
No, but the ones that similar products, right? HP didn't make it.
Yeah.
You know, two different server groups. One derated, one didn't derate. One was paying it through the nose for warranty and field failures. Okay. The other one wasn't. And it's, I mean, what more evidence do you need?
Well, because it could have been one component that was causing the problem.
Well, that's fine. It could have been 200 components. We don't know. But derating, and it was economical, it solved the problem. Right. We're going to agree to disagree like we've always done in the past. And I'm still shocked that you're on a derating. But if you're playing devil's advocate, you keep those guys on their toes and make them think through what they're doing, which is perfect. But I think we do agree that making a robust product, finding a weak point, making it robust is a good thing. Because there is variability in components, there's variability in assembly, there's variability in use in environments. And like the mechanical guys that have a safety margin, essentially, we're derating is its parallel in my mind in electronics. And yes, I agree with you that if we could isolate it to the handful of components and only mess with those, we would save a bunch of money, but it's a trade-off.
Right.
And that's my point.
It is a trade-off. Yeah. It is a trade-off. And it takes samples. Right.
So let's ask our listeners. Is like, you know, you've heard Kirk and I go back and forth on derating and a variety of other stuff over the years. What's your take on it? And do you guys use derating and why? And if you don't, you know, what do you do instead? And or do you isolate it down to the critical components and then make them more robust? And using like as and I agree with you, Kirk, HALT is a great way to go after those things. Doing it well, by the way, you can find those weaknesses and sort it out. But what other factors play a role in that? So let us know. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR, and we'd love to hear from you. So you can also get in touch with either Kirk or I or any of the hosts on the show through our About pages on Ascendo. And as far as I know, everybody's on LinkedIn, and I know I get comments there regularly. So we'd love to hear from you. So with that, Kirk, I don't want to hold you up because I know you've got yet another standards committee meeting you got to prepare for. So
another what? Did I have to
this is another
for?
Standards meeting. Yeah. Lots of homework between those meetings.
No, I'm lofting with these standards meeting, and I dropped out of the prediction one because I just couldn't take it. and this recent one with the derating, I'm kind of lofting and seeing what they're coming up with. But again, I want to see what you've just talked about. If anybody out there can tie the link physical failure mode to what they discovered that they had derated properly and saved them from field failures, that's fine. It's just a different approach we're looking at. So,
yeah, perfect. All right. Thanks, Kirk.
You bet, Fred. Talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.